Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Chapter 20, Lord Vishnu's appearance in the sacrificial arena. Texts 35 and 36. Devarshi Pitri Gandhava
Devarshi Pitri Gandhava
Siddha Charana Pannaga
Saraso Marcha
Tagabhutanyanikasa Yageshvara Dhyaragya Vadvitanjali Bhaktita Sabhajataya Yusarve Vaikuntha Nugatastata
Vaikuntha Nugatastata
Devarshi Pitri Gandharva
Devarshi Pitri Gandharva
Siddha Charana Pannaga
Siddha Charana Pannaga
Kinnarapsaraso Martya
Kinnarapsaraso Martya
Kagabhutanyanikasa
Kagabhutanyanikasa
Yageshvara Dhyaragya
Yageshvara Dhyaragya
Bhagvatanjali Bhaktita
Bhagvatanjali Bhaktita
Sabhajataya Yusarve
Sabhajataya Yusarve
Vaikuntha Nugatastata
Vaikuntha Nugatastata
Devarshi Pitri Gandharva
Devarshi Pitri Gandharva
Siddha Charana Pannaga
Siddha Charana Pannaga
Kinnarapsaraso Matya Kagabhutanyanekasa Yageshvara Dhyaragya Bhagvatanjali Bhaktita Sabhajata Yayasarve Vaikuntha Nugatastata Deva,
Deva,
the demigods,
Rishi,
the great sages, Pitri,
inhabitants of
Pitriloka,
Gandharva,
inhabitants of Gandharva Loka,
Siddha,
inhabitants of Siddha Loka,
Charana,
inhabitants of Charana Loka,
Pannaga,
inhabitants of the planets where serpents live. Kinnara, inhabitants of the Kinnara planets. Apsarasa,
inhabitants of
Apsara
Loka.
Marcha,
inhabitants of the earthly planets.
Kaga, birds. Bhutani,
other living entities. Anekasha,
many. Yagya Ishvara Dhyā, with the perfect intelligence of thinking as part and parcel of the Supreme Lord. Ragya, by the King. Vak, with sweet words. Vitta, wealth. Anjali, with folded hands. Bhaktita, in a spirit of devotional service. Sabhajita,
being properly worshipped.
Yayu,
when.
Sarve,
all.
Vaikuntha,
Vaikuntha,
of the Supreme Personality of Godhead.
Of the Supreme Personality of Godhead.
Vishnu.
Vishnu.
Anugata.
Anugata.
Followers.
Followers.
Chata. From that place.
From that place.
Translation. King Pitu worshiped the demigods, the great sages, the inhabitants of Pitriloka, the inhabitants of Gandharvaloka, and those of Siddhaloka, Charanaloka, Pannagaloka, Kinnaraloka, Apsaraloka, the earthly planets, and the planets of the birds. He also worshipped many other living entities who presented themselves in the sacrificial arena. With folded hands, he worshipped all these, as well as the Supreme Personality of Godhead and the personal associates of the Lord, by offering sweet words and as much wealth as possible. After this function, they all went back to their respective abodes, following in the footsteps of Lord Vishnu. Purport. In modern so-called scientific society, the idea is very prevalent that there is no life on other planets, but that only on the Earth do living entities with intelligence and scientific knowledge exist. The Vedic literatures, however, do not accept this foolish theory. The followers of Vedic wisdom are fully aware of various planets inhabited by varieties of living entities, such as the demigods, the sages, the pitas, the gandharvas, the pandagas, the kinnaras, the charanas, the siddhas, and the apsaras. The Vedas give information that in all planets, not only within the material sky, but also in the spiritual sky, there are varieties of living entities. Although all these living entities are one spiritual nature, in quality the same as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, they have varieties of bodies due to the embodiment of the spirit soul by the eight material elements, namely earth, water, fire, air, sky, mind, intelligence, and pulsing field. In the spiritual world, however, there is no such distinction between the body and the embodied. In the material world, distinctive features are manifested in different types of bodies in the various planets. We have full information from the Vedic literature that in each and every planet, both material and spiritual, there are living entities of varied intelligence. The Earth is one of the planets of the Bhurloka planetary system. There are six planetary systems above Bhurloka and seven planetary systems below it. Therefore, the entire universe is known as Chaturdasha Bhuvana, indicating that it has 14 different planetary systems. Beyond the planetary systems in this material sky, there's another sky, which is known as Parabrahma, or the spiritual sky, where there are spiritual planets. The inhabitants of those planets engage in varieties of loving service unto the Supreme Personality of Godhead, which include different rasas, or relationships, known as Dasya Rasa, Sakya Rasa, Vatsalya Rasa, Madhurya Rasa, and above all, Parakiya Rasa. This Parakiya Rasa, or paramour love, is prevalent in Krishna Loka, where Lord Krishna lives. This planet is also called Goloka Vrindavan, and although Lord Krishna lives there perpetually, he expands himself in millions and trillions of forms. In one of such forms, he appears on this material planet, in a particular place known as Vrindavan Dham, where he displays his original pastimes of Goloka Vrindavan Dham in the spiritual sky in order to attract the conditioned souls back home, back to Godhead. Om Agena Chimanandasya Gananjana Shurakaya Chokshur Militam Yena Tajmai Shri Gurave Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shri Lasini Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Ram Hare Ram Rama Ram Hare Hare. We're at the end of the description of Lord Vishnu's appearance. in the sacrificial arena. Now, according to the acharyas, only Prithu Maharaj was able to see Vishnu, because seeing the Supreme Personality of Godhead, that ability to do that is the prerogative of the Supreme Personality of Godhead himself. Just like when you read Bhagavad Gita, you see that in order for Arjuna to see the universal form, he needed permission, blessings, or the grace of Krishna. This is a different concept for us, because we're so accustomed to thinking that I have eyes and I see all that there is to be known. Whereas, starting with Bhagavad Gita, Krishna introduces you to the reality that he controls your perception. Therefore, for a Vaishnava, for a Bhakta, the emphasis is not on trying to see the Supreme Personality of Godhead, but acting in such a way that the Supreme Personality of Godhead will want to see you, will want to make himself known to you. So therefore, the focus in Bhakti Yoga is on seva, on service. The attitude of the mature devotee is, Krishna, it would be so wonderful if I could see you, but where is the service to you? When you desire to make yourself visible to me, you will do that. But before then, during then, and after then, where is the devotional service? This is why Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu prays, Mama Janmani Janmani Sridhe Bhavata Bhakti Aoyituki Dwaye. I don't mind taking even birth after birth in the material world as long as I have devotional service. So in mature God realization, when bhakti becomes mature, the emphasis is not on seeing Krishna, but serving Krishna. Krishna can do what he likes. He can give his association, he can give his darshan as he likes, according to his own motivations, his own agenda. But we don't like that because we're proud. In order to be in material existence, you have to be proud. Now you may say that, well, we may have many faults, but we're not so proud. But as soon as we assert ourselves as the enjoyer, we are showing pride. We are, as they say in Australia, full of ourselves. We've gone over the top. In that we're imagining that we have capacity that we don't have. Those of you who work in the corporate world, business world, you know, if you don't have capacity, you don't have capacity. But dare we think that this inadequate capacity applies to us in our attempts to be the enjoyer? Constitutionally, we don't have that capacity. We are tiny samples of the Supreme. Just like a drop of ocean water is a tiny sample of the ocean. There is some saltiness in that tiny drop, but that amount of saltiness in the drop cannot compare to what is in the ocean. So because we are part of Krishna, we have the enjoying tendency. Now Krishna has that enjoying capacity unlimitedly. I often explain, as Srila Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami points out in Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, the Supreme Personality of Godhead has a characteristic called Swaraja Lakshmi, which means he is completely independent in fulfilling his desires. But as tiny parts and parcels, as soon as we try to fulfill our desires, we're on shaky ground because we don't have the capacity to fulfill our own desires. Therefore, we have to go outside of ourselves to fulfill our desires. And that's very risky, as you have experienced birth after birth. You have to go outside of yourself. Whereas Krishna never does that. He is genuinely Atmarama, self-satisfied, because he never goes outside the scope of his energies to fulfill himself. And everything is his energy. Therefore, Om Purnamada Purnamidam, Krishna is perfect and complete. Not simply that he includes everything, but in that he never has to rely on anything outside of himself to fulfill his desires. When we finally can come to grips with this Siddhanta, this perfect reality, this perfect inclusion, that we are not capable of being enjoyers, only then will we be peaceful. Otherwise, we'll always be harassed by the desire to be an imitation enjoyer, a pseudo-enjoyer. We make peace by recognizing who is the proprietor of our equipment. Is our equipment of the body, the mind, the intelligence, is that meant for our own independent efforts to generate enjoyment? Or is that equipment meant for serving Krishna? So this is the peace formula, as Krishna explains at the end of the 5th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, Bhoktayam Yagatapasam, Sarva Lokamesh, Suvidam Sarva Bhutanam, Gyakramam, Shantam Rishtasi. You'll attain shanti, peace. Finally, when we accept that Krishna is a supreme enjoyer, and we are not. So the bhakti yoga process is a practical methodology for curing our madness of trying to be the enjoyer. This is our career, stated in negative terms. This is what we don't want to be. But what do we want to be? We want to act in our real position as eternal servants of Krishna. So the tension that we may feel in bhakti, in our practice, is due to the hangover of trying to be the enjoyer. And Bhagavatam focuses on that illusory contrivance, purport after purport. Because we rely on our faulty vision, what the eye can see, we observe that everyone is acting like the enjoyer. There may be a few problems from time to time, but so what? That's all our eyes tell us. We're surrounded by pseudo-enjoyers. But when we take our wisdom and our experience from Srimad Bhagavatam, our vision changes. So yes, the Bhagavatam is speaking about so many things beyond the range of our vision, indeed, beyond the range of all of our senses. Here you see in these two verses descriptions of planets that you were never taught about in school. Pitriloka, Gandharvaloka, Siddhaloka, Charnaloka, Pranagaloka, Kinnaraloka, Apsaraloka, planets of the birds, planets of the snakes. You know, what is all this? But the Vedic texts explain to us there are many planets in this universe that the ordinary human vision can't see. So if you base your whole life on what your senses perceive, or using technology, what the enhanced perception, the enhanced sense perception can observe, your knowledge will always be limited. To understand that requires humility. So this is why Srila Prabhupada would sometimes express in very hot statements about how materialistically minded scientists are ruining the world. Because of their pride that we are capable of understanding when their sense perception range is so limited and so faulty. So just in this verse and purport, you get a panorama of the spiritual world and the material world. You see, there's so much variety. Krishna and the living entities are one in quality, but the living entities take on so many different bodies, which are different from their nature. Krishna has many forms, but the forms are not different from his nature. Krishna and his expansions and incarnations are never different from the body. But our problems are that we have taken on material bodies. That is a problem. Therefore, you may recall in the fifth canto, Lord Rishabhdev instructing his sons, Nunam kamata kurute vikarma yet indriya pritya apranoti nasarumanye yata atmanoyam asandapi kleshada asadeha. He explained that when the living entity engages in material activities, that means activities trying to be the enjoyer, the living entity becomes mad. The condition that you're in becomes worse. You shouldn't have taken a material body, but by engaging in materialistic activities, you perpetuate taking on and giving up bodies one after another. So Lord Vrishabhdev says, Nasadu Manye. I don't think this is very intelligent. So this knowledge, this information requires deep thought. Because this wisdom is outside the box of our normal material way of thinking, in which we consciously or unconsciously are so dependent on our limited faulty senses. So as you see now, human beings, although they don't know much about the universe and all the planetary systems, what to speak of the spirit universe, this one little planet they do know about, they are ready to destroy. Environmentally, through nuclear weapons, challenging each other with nuclear weapons, especially around election time. And who knows what's the truth? What's really going on? All you can say for sure is the planet is being destroyed. This one little planet that everyone claims to know all about, although knowing nothing about the rest of the universe in terms of its endless variety and how life is everywhere, that is not known. But what supposedly is known, we destroy. So now, throughout the world, so many school children, they're rising up in protest. The adults have destroyed our planet. We will come of age during a time of environmental havoc. And they're right. But that's only one half the problem. There are what is called the apocalyptic twins, the twins of apocalypse, utter destruction. You have climate change, and then you have the threat of nuclear weapons. So now everyone is wondering. Both India and Pakistan have about 125 nuclear weapons, totaling 250. If just 100 of those 250 are released, it's not just an affair that involves India and Pakistan. The whole southern hemisphere will be affected. The weather will change. Yet everyone's in a mad race. How to develop more and more nuclear weapons. How to destroy this little planet, which they claim to know about, while not knowing anything about the unlimited variety of life throughout the universe. But whatever little they know about, let's destroy it. So the next race between India and Pakistan is who can have nuclear armed submarines, because those are the ultimate weapon. They stay under the water 6 months at a time. Very difficult to deal with. For example, the US has nuclear armed submarines. Just one submarine carries enough nuclear weaponry to surpass what was dropped in World War II on Hiroshima and Nagasaki, surpass that 2,000 times. Just one submarine has that kind of destructive power, more than 2,000 times what hit Nagasaki and Hiroshima. And people are still wondering about that. Oh, how horrible. Oh, it had to happen to end the war. Oh, but it was such destruction. Those bombs were mere firecrackers. Just see what advanced human beings have done. So if you're so advanced, stop the destruction. Oh, well. We don't know how to do that, but we can invent more destructiveness. So this is the situation. When you rely on knowledge that's simply restricted by your sense perception, you do all kinds of madness. Just like if we asked him, you are now Prime Minister of Australia, do whatever you like. What would you say? He would tell everyone, now you can all chew bubble gum. Something like that, right? You like bubble gum? You like bubble gum? Chewing gum? That's good. It's bad for your teeth. But he would say something like that. No school for everyone. Right? Just watch television all day, right? And you don't have to, children throughout Australia, you don't have to clean your rooms. Do you clean your room at home? Or you make your mother do it? Uh-huh. Sometimes you clean, sometimes your mother cleans. That's what mothers are for, right? So he'll act according to his limited capacity, his limited vision. Similarly, the so-called adults are doing that, but what's the result? The planet is being destroyed. And no one can do anything about it. So you have kids, schoolies, age 6 to 15 all over the world, protesting. As you know, there was one protest in Melbourne, November 30th, throughout all the major cities and towns in Australia. There was a protest in Belgium, Brussels, Belgium, 35,000 kids. Protested. They skipped school to protest. Then the government environmental minister had to resign because she said, oh, I know why these kids are doing it. They have been instigated by foreign powers. So she had to step down. It was a big outrage. Your prime minister here, he instructed all the school kids, don't skip school, don't be an activist. They told him, we'll stay in school instead of protesting if you'll come to school with us and learn about the environment. So this is all going on. Because We're relying on our limited imperfect senses. It's like if you make this Prabhu here, little Prabhu, in charge of the government, he can only rely on his senses. No school, no cleaning rooms, children. Do whatever you like. All money should be made of bubble gum. And for breakfast, lunch, and dinner, simply sweets. Right? So he'll act according to his capacity. He'll try to govern according to his capacity. But everyone knows his capacity is so limited. He has to depend on his mother and father. But similarly, human beings take up leading roles and simply depend on their very limited and perfect capacity. And then they wonder, why is everything such a mess? The Supreme Personality of Godhead is departing from this yogi arena. He has come as Chirodakshaya Vishnu. And now he's going to withdraw his presence. As we pointed out, evidently only Prithu Maharaj could see him. The comings and goings, arrivals and departures, are very important in Srimad Bhagavatam, because they stir bhava, emotions. You'll see so many descriptions in Srimad Bhagavatam about, like in the first canto, Lord Krishna departing Hastinapur, and then Lord Krishna's arrival in Dwarka. Comings and goings are very important because they stir various emotions. Of course, you know the whole emotional state behind the Rath Yatra parade. Trying to bring Krishna back to Vrindavan. Going here, coming from there, these are very important because they involve meeting and separation. With our material senses, we prefer meeting instead of separation. Especially since Kali Yuga means meeting up with what you don't want and being separated from what you do want. That is a basic axiom or principle of Kali Yuga. The things you want, you always feel separation from them. The things you don't want, you always meet up with them. That's the basic rule of the thumb. But on the spiritual platform, separation is more of an intense, loving experience than meeting. Meeting involves anticipation. This is described in Sri Dhanacharitamrita, in Bhakti Rasamrita, Sindhu, Nectar Devotion. The Purvaraga, the feelings of anticipation before the devotee and the Lord meet. And it's especially so in what is mentioned in this purport. In the Madhurya Ras, above all, Parakya Ras. The anticipation is such a distinct feature. Yet, separation is even more intense. That's a little difficult for us to understand. We can, with our material senses, appreciate anticipation. Oh, I can't wait for this to happen. I can't wait for that to happen. I can't wait to be in this person's presence. But separation? How can separation be more ecstatic than meeting? This is the mystery of Vrindavan. And to understand this mystery of Vrindavan, you have to understand the superiority of love of Krishna and separation. Ordinarily, that would be impossible to grasp except for Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who, especially in his last years, his 12 years in Dhanapuri, demonstrated the peak of love of Krishna and separation. Therefore, our whole sampradaya, at its deepest level, is not concerned with seeing Krishna, but trying to please Krishna and allowing Krishna to appear and disappear as he likes. And you may have heard me often explain that our predecessors, Sadhu Gosai, Sis Goswamis of Vrindavan, they never say, now I have Krishna. All their literature is putting forth the point, where is Krishna? Krishna is just up ahead. I thought I had him, but now he's disappeared from me. So this is the unique experience of the spiritual world. Material planets mean the agony of separation from what you want, and the agony of meeting up with what you don't want. Spiritual world means the ecstasy of meeting Krishna and the even more ecstasy of separation from Krishna. It's a little baffling to understand. Even Krishna wants to know about this complexity, this intricacy. Therefore, he comes as Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Let me taste what is this love of me and separation. But how can Krishna separate himself from himself? So in order to taste what the topmost devotees are tasting, especially Srimati Radharani, Krishna, covered with the emotions of his dearest devotee, so much so he turns golden, he comes in her position with her emotions to taste what it's like to love himself and feel separation from himself. That is the deepest mystery of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. For understanding things that are beyond our sense perception, we can only depend on the Shastra. Just like this little boy here, he can only depend on his parents. Would you criticize him for that? Be an adult. What do you think? What's your opinion? What do you want to do? How do you think the world should run? He just laughs. So what do you want out of me? I'm just a little boy. I want to play. Ask my mother. Ask my father. But if we say to you, what do you know? You can only take the Vedic version. We are very intelligent. We are IT wallets. We are engineers. We are bankers. We fail to admit our dependency. But as you make more and more spiritual advancement, you become more childlike in a very wonderful way. You realize, for information, for knowledge, I have to rely on a superior source. Now, sometimes there's criticism, especially in the non-Indian world, but it's happening more and more in the Indian world. It's becoming fashionable to just push away Vedic knowledge, just granny folk tales. So people will tell you that, why can't you just live with the mysteries of life? Why do you feel the need to resolve all the questions of existence by accepting one package, one doctrine, one ideology? In other words, they're implying that you have oversimplified life because you're just taking your knowledge from Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam. Wouldn't it be superior to take your knowledge from whatever, wherever? Wouldn't that be more mature? That's like telling this little boy, why should you rely on your parents? So simplistic. There's so many persons in this world. You just go out in the street. Go up, get on the tram and just talk to everyone. Hey, what can you tell me? Would you think that's what the little boy should do? Should we criticize him? Why are you taking guidance from your parents? Sometimes you may wonder, but... So similarly, we have this problem. Isn't it simplistic just to take your knowledge from one source? Why not be brave, be courageous, and accept that? Man, just a little bit of information here, a little bit of information there. Put it together, make your own blend. That seems more mature and advanced, right? Why everything has to be Krishna, Krishna? To answer that challenge, you have to understand the science of Krishna. How Krishna is the source of everything. Now, if I say to you, all right, let us say, Chandanishra's wife gives him a long shopping list. This is what we need at home. If he knows that there is one mega store that has everything, will we criticize him for going there? No, no, you should go to every little shop individually. Will we criticize him if he knows I can get the best products at the cheapest price from a big mega store? Why should I go hunting around Melbourne, one little shop for this, one little shop for that? It'll take me all week. So no one will criticize him for going to a big mega store. They'll say, very good, one-stop shopping. You're a working man, family man, you have so much to do. Yes, one-stop shopping is the best. But if you say, take your knowledge from Krishna. No, you should take a little bit from here, take a little bit from here, there. That's more mature. Why do you feel the need to resolve all the multiple complexities of life by adopting one ideological package? So you're supposed to shake when you hear that. Oh, I have adopted one ideological package. Am I sure this is it? But it's your responsibility to understand the science of Krishna. How the superior method of living is to take knowledge from the ultimate source. Just like the mundane example, the superior way of shopping is if you can get the best deals by going to one store for your long shopping list, you do that. So the best knowledge comes from Krishna. The knowledge that comes from Krishna is not subject to the three phases of time, past, present, and future. Whereas material knowledge may have been true in the past, it won't be true in the present, and certainly won't be true in the future. Just like this tract of land now is called Australia. In the past, it wasn't Australia. In the present, it's known as Australia. Who knows what it will be in the future? Maybe it'll have a Chinese name. Spiritual knowledge is true throughout all three phases of time. That is the advantage. So there's so much information in Srimad Bhagavatam that is beyond the range of our senses. But if you really want to know it all, take up the process to verify it. Now you may say, well, that'll take some time. But even for you to study material things takes so much time. Over many days, how many years did you study your technology at University of Melbourne?
4.5 years.
Your whole university career?
8.5.
8.5 years. What were you studying?
Undergrad in electronics engineering.
And then graduate PhD in?
Master's wireless, PhD wireless.
Wireless. Is the knowledge that you study, is it current? Of course. It's affected by the three stages of time, past, present, and future. We're accustomed to this, so naturally, we assume that's what Bhagavatam is like. This information comes from the past, and no doubt it's not all holding up in the present. So then you have to understand what is the ultimate source of the knowledge. And then, if you want to verify it, put in the time to live according to the Bhagavatam's instructions, and gradually you'll be able to understand. Now you may say, all right, does that mean that if you're an older devotee, you can see the inhabitants of Pitraloka, the inhabitants of Gandharvaloka, Sipaloka, Charnaloka, especially of Saraloka? Can you see all that? No, the devotees are interested in seeing service to Krishna. And that desire to see service to Krishna automatically brings the devotee realization of the spiritual world. Just like a good child wants to please the parent, similarly, the devotee wants to please Krishna. And then everything comes from that. The greatest mystery is not of the material cosmos, it is of Vrindavan Dham. And Nodik Dham is not different from Vrindavan Dham. Those are the mysteries that we should try to understand. But Dham Tattva, the truth of the Holy Dham, is difficult because the Holy Dham is purely spiritual, presenting itself in the material world, just like the deities. The deities look like matter because that's all that we can see, but they are Krishna. Krishna, he's independent, he can do what he likes. He can appear before you looking like matter because that's all you can see. And then when he does that, you criticize, oh, this is just a statue. Similarly, the Holy Dham, Mayapur Dham, Vrindavan Dham, they are embassies of the spiritual world. To see that, we require purified vision. One look one way and they seem to be just some chaotic, dusty towns in India. But for vision that's enhanced by devotional service, you sense something else. Everyone knows, as soon as you enter within Vrindavan Dham, Mayapur Dham, what do you feel like doing? You immediately feel like chanting Hare Krishna. Just your tongue starts moving. You immediately feel like hearing Krishna. So you can prove that to yourself. You may, according to ordinary vision, look around and say, well, there's just traffic jams everywhere, horns honking everywhere, shops everywhere, people walking on the streets, everything is chaotic. But then, why do I feel like chanting Hare Krishna? Because something else is going on. And we'll only be able to see it through the eyes of service. Lord Vishnu has instructed Prithu Maharaj about service, and now he's departing. And Prithu will also depart the Yajna area and go back to his city. And all the residents of the other planets, they'll go back to their places. In this way, you can understand that there are different abodes, different residences for different types of living entities with their different consciousness. We are following Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu by the mercy of Sri Nityananda Prabhu. And that way, we're entitled to the highest abode in existence, Goloka Vrindavan. Any questions? Yeah.
When you mentioned about the devotion service and how our goal is not to see Krishna, but rather only to serve him. But when the Lord of service is when the Lord of service is there, the Lord of service opportunities, sometimes it gets a little too much, and especially when everything, so many things need to happen and all need to happen urgently.
And so?
Yeah, just gets a little, get the mind, gets a little tired sometimes.
We don't want to ever be resentful about the flood of devotional service. We want to beg Krishna for the intelligence and expertise to handle that flood, to swim in the flood. We never want to resent devotional service opportunities. We recognize our inabilities and we're begging Krishna, how can I serve you with more intelligence? Please give me moment-to-moment guidance. You have to start coping with devotional service by having that aspiration. Because Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, Tesham Sapayatam Bhajatam Priti Purva. To those who are constantly devoted with priti, not with resentment, but with priti, affection, I talk to them and I give them customized instructions how to come to me, how to do their service. So that's what I'm praying for. I recommend it. But don't resent. Feel fortunate. You have an ocean of devotional service to drown in. Bahunam jamanamante. After many births and deaths, you have this chance. Vasudeva Sarvamiti. Samaha Vasudeva. So just like I'm doing, so many others are doing, you pray, please. What is the best thing I can do for you now? At this moment. So many service possibilities. But don't resent the flood of devotional service. By Lord Chaitanya's mercy, by Lord Nityananda's mercy, you're experiencing the flood, the rarest thing in existence. So now you just need to know how to swim in the flood. But you'll never get that ability to swim expertly in the flood if you resent it. Just like their examples. It's quite, how do you say, it's not infrequent. Someone wins the lottery for hundreds of thousands, even millions of dollars, and later they resent it because their whole life becomes disrupted. Did you know that? They can no longer tell who's a real friend, who's not. So many complexities come about because they have so much money and everyone knows it. You won $200 million in the lottery. And some of them actually curse the day they won the money. Their children become drug addicts or even meet with murder. Children are depressed, commit suicide because they They have so much money from their father or mother and have no idea what to do with it. So yes, there are so many cases of people who won huge prizes in the lottery, $200 million, and they cursed the day it happened. They don't know how to handle it. Of course, all you humans say, we won't have that problem, does it? It's easy to say. But life is what happens while we're busy making plans and having dreams. So in real life, these people are resentful. So many of them. I have seen video clips of someone being notified that your ticket has won the grand prize in the lottery. You were a finalist, so that person knew he was going to get something. But the grand prize, $200 million, he didn't know until the end of the horse race. In the USA, that's the system. The horse race determines the ultimate winner amongst the finalists. So, when the person's winning, the person's winning horse is crossing the finish line, he said, and then, I won't let it change me. The fear, this is going to be too much. One guy even said after he won $200 million, I'll be back at work at the garage tomorrow. Fear. And as I said, some of them even cursed the day they won the lottery because so much havoc happened to their family. Thousands of long-lost relatives turn up at their door. I'm your third cousin. Of course, devotees don't gamble, but if someone gave one of you a winning lottery ticket, what's the big prize? Anyone know? In Victoria, or I don't know. 10 million. All right. And if news got out in India that you won 10 million in the lottery, whole villages would recognize you as their relative, right? Right? Whole state. And they'd be constantly contacting you, flying over, you know. Please, our village is desperate. Please, build 10 hospitals. You get no peace. Then if you're a married man, you start to wonder, now that I won $10 million, does my wife really love me, or is it just the money? Maybe she'll, because we live in Australia, maybe she'll divorce me because she knows she can get 50% of the assets. Right? And everything gets so complicated. Not like India. Yeah, 50%. Yeah, it's complete anxiety. Then your children. Dad, buy me a Ferrari. It can become so problematic. Both sides of your family, the wife's side, the husband's side, and you fight. No, no, give up. We should get most of the money. No, no, we should get most of the money. It becomes crazy. So we don't want to develop that resentment. Like these lottery winners have developed. We don't want to develop that in regard to devotional service. No matter what happens, we express gratitude. And just acknowledge, Krishna, I need more intelligence how to serve you. What would please you more, whether I do this or do that? If one day you can enlighten me with that intelligence, the Dhammi Buddhi Yogam Tam, I would be so happy. So any serious devotee has to think like that. Just like I'm thinking, oh, at GBC responsibilities and other parts of the world, especially North America, maybe I should just let them go and just go work in days. Always telling me, we have this event for you to do here in Melbourne, we have that event. So I have to pray to Krishna, what's it? Srila Prabhupada, what is the best that you want from me? I don't want to be influenced by a desire to just take it easy. Ah, no more flying around the world anymore. I can just go back and forth between Australia and New Zealand. Ah, yes. That is a factor, but overall I have to appeal to Srila Prabhupada, to Krishna. What's the best way you want me to serve? Alright? Yes?
You were mentioning that there's many young people again interested in activism and environmentalism.
It's starting to happen, and the adults are astonished. Because the young people are thinking. You call them here schoolies?
Yeah.
They're thinking, we're the ones who inherit this mess. You guys are all going to be dead and gone when the worst hits.
That's right, especially in Melbourne, we have so many people like that.
You keep trying and Krishna will give you intelligence. Don't give up. That day cannot use their intelligence properly means you have more opportunity for service. That's how Lord Nityananda looks at the situation. More form means more opportunity for me to do service. It's good they're being stirred up. And then when they get frustrated from that, some of them will look for a higher solution. It's like I was listening to Srila Prabhupada being interviewed by one reporter in San Francisco who asked, what will this Krishna consciousness do for the social welfare of the world? And Prabhupada explained, sociology means no meat eating, no gambling, no illicit sex, no intoxication. That is sociology. That will affect the whole social welfare of everyone. Of course, you know, the reporter was shocked to hear that. You repeat the message of Lord Krishna, Krishna will give you intelligence how to package that essential eternal message. Don't be discouraged. So you're meeting many young kids who are...
Some, huh? Good.
So you tell them, this will go deeper. Or this will help your activism.
It's difficult because sometimes when they come to the temple, they criticize the devotees.
They come to the temple even?
Sometimes they bring
them. Oh, they bring them.
And then they criticize
them. What do they say?
They create a lot of rubbish.
What do you mean by creating rubbish?
Like, some of our temple, like, these plastic spoons and all this.
Plastic spoons, what else?
Commercial soap. It goes inside the water.
Yes, we need to walk our talk.
The commercial dairy industry, they come out with
soap. What's that?
Commercial dairy industry, they say they're supporting. The commercial dairy industry.
I don't.
It's really difficult.
You can only give yourself as an example at this point. When they ask me, you know, that, or commercial dairy, you see, individually, I do not. Some devotees have the idea that since there's not enough ahimsa milk to go around, that those who are forced to buy the violent milk because they have families, so many things like that, they should put some money aside to support cow protection, to offset, like carbon offset. In this way, it'll be slaughter milk offset. And then give it to a place that's protecting cows. The idea is that you balance things out in that way. Balance out the bad karma, the good karma. So there are practical ways that we need to think of for dealing with the situation, because it's becoming more and more of an issue. I think, what is it, there's some day in March where there are going to be demonstrations throughout the whole world by the schoolies. I forget, like March 15th or something like that. So if we want to show an example of doing our best to live in this world in a way that doesn't directly injure the environment, we have to, if you want to show that, we have to do certain things. Otherwise, yes, they will criticize. You can say, well, we need your help. Give us some information, make some suggestions. Bring them in like that. Don't be like the prime minister who said, you kids should just go back to school. They say, yeah, if you come with us and learn something. So, try to be inclusive. To say, yes, there are things we need to improve. Can you help? Can you suggest? Doesn't it sound better than just... Now we are right, we are devotees. It's true. We are right as devotees, but because this is a preaching mission of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, we want to bring people in. We want to be inclusive. Anything else? Yes.
When you gave the example of this shopping mall and things like that, when they explain to people who are a bit biased background, they say, these are all material examples. Why do you always give material examples?
Because you have material intelligence, so therefore... The proof is the Shastra, but you won't accept that, so therefore we... present a material example so you can kind of wrap your mind around it. But the proof is Shastra, but you don't want to hear that. All right. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.